We present St. Gregory Nazianzen, one of the four great Greek doctors of the Universal Church, known as the Theologian, or the Divine, and the third of the three holy hierarchs of the Byzantines.
Gregory of Nazianz, or Nazianzus, was born around the year 330 AD in Arians in Cappadocia, the region in the east of Asia Minor belonging to Turkey. In reality, his claim to be called Gregory of Nazianz is only one of custom. It was his father, also a Gregory and Bishop of Nazianz, who was the rightful owner of this title.
The younger Gregory was educated in Cappadocia, Palestine, Alexandria, and Athens. And it was while a student that he became friends with Basil of Caesarea, the greatest of the Cappadocian fathers.
Of this friendship, which was to last till Basil's death, it has been said that Basil was the elm and Gregory the vine that wraps itself about the elm.
Gregory, who was a gentle and peaceful man, was drawn to meditation and the literary life rather than action. Even as a student, his ideal was the monastic life, and he spent long periods in Basil's monastery on the River Iris. This is how Basil himself describes it.
There's a lofty mountain, covered with thick woods, watered towards the north with cool and transparent streams. A plain lies beneath, enriched by the waters which are ever draining off upon it, and skirted by a spontaneous profusion of trees almost thick enough to be a fence, so as even to surpass Calypso's island, which Homer seems to have considered the most beautiful spot on earth. Does it not strike you what a foolish mistake I was near making when I was eager to change this spot for your Tiberina, the very pit of the whole earth? Pardon me, then, if I am now set upon it. For not Alcmaeon himself, I suppose, would endure to wander further when he had found the Echinades.
But about Christmas time in the year 361 or 362, the elder Gregory, at the insistence of his congregation, more or less forcefully ordained his son to the priesthood. Indeed, at this period, writes Maisie Ward, there seems to have been the curious idea that one did nothing but good to a man by forcing him to accept the grace of ordination, and with it responsibilities for which he might well be unfitted. Although thousands were flying into the deserts to seek the life of contemplation, the principle that a man might have simply a contemplative vocation was often curiously ignored.
After a short flight to the Pontus to see Basil, he returned in the Easter of 362 and stayed to assist his father in Nazianz. In 372, the government divided Cappadocia into two provinces, and Basil, who was left as metropolitan of a small see, tried to reassert jurisdiction over the lost territory. He consecrated his friend Gregory as bishop of a little town called Sassina at a road junction in the lost area. The reluctant Gregory never took charge of his desert crossroad see, which he described as follows.
Without water, without grass, a frightfully horrible and narrow little village.
There were very few houses in Sazima, but there was a jail where, Gregory says, you could hear the groans of the victims and their rattling chains. In Sazima there was nothing green, no water, nothing but dust. Nevertheless, as Newman comments, surely a saint and an ascetic should not have objected to being sent to Sazima because it was deficient in beauty and interest. Gregory continued, as bishop, to help his father at Nazianz, preaching often memorable sermons. In the year 373, after a prolonged drought and a deadly cattle plague, the crops were then totally destroyed by hail. Gregory addressed his people.
I know the trembling and the staggering and the heaving and the wrenching of the heart and the palsied knees and the like that are the punishments of the impious. But I do not mean to speak of the judgments to come, to which indulgence in this life will deliver us. For it is better to be punished and cleansed now than to be sent to the torment to come, when it will be time for punishing only and not for cleansing.
The following year, old Bishop Gregory died, and his son preached the funeral oration in the presence of Basil of Caesarea. The elder Gregory, before his conversion, had belonged to the sect of the Hypsisterians.
He was ours even before he was of our fold. His manner of life made him one of us. Just as there are many of our own who are not with us, whose lives alienate them from the common body, so too there are many of those outside who belong really to us, men whose devout conduct anticipates their faith. They lack only the name of that which in fact they possess. My father was one of these, an alien shoot, but inclined to us in his manner of life.
Gregory saw that if he stayed at Nazianz, no new bishop would be appointed, and the year following his father's death, he withdrew to Seleucia. But a few years later, the Nicene community in Constantinople, a see which had been long in the hands of Arians and troubled by many other heresies, invited Gregory to come there as bishop. He accepted. In an oration which he called Against the Arians and About Myself, he declared,
I am so old-fashioned a philosopher that I still believe the heavens are one and common to all, that there is a common coursing of the sun and moon. And what is more than this, we have in common reason, law, prophets, and the very suffering of Christ by which we are recreated. Not this one or that one, but all who are participants in the same Adam, and were led astray by the serpent and slain by sin, and are saved again by the heavenly Adam, and are led back by means of the tree of shame to the tree of life, from which we had fallen away.
A modern scholar comments that Gregory's introverted and dissatisfied spirit is apparent in his homilies. Certainly, he is close to the modern spirit, as in this comment on the words of the Gospel in Matthew chapter 19, verse 1.
Their laws are unequal and irregular. Why did they restrain the woman but indulge the man? A woman who practices evil against her husband's bed is guilty of adultery, and for this the penalties of the law are very severe. But a husband committing fornication against his wife, has he no account to give? I do not accept this legislation, nor do I approve this custom. They who made the law were men, and their legislation is hard on women. This is not how God acts. He says, honor thy father and thy mother. The first time there is a commandment to which a promise is joined, that it may be well with thee. See the equality of the legislation. There is one maker of man and woman. One and the same debt is owed by children to both parents.
Apart from his homilies, Gregory wrote many letters, and himself published a collection of them, apparently the first Greek author to do so, on the request of his sister's grandson. His letters are, we are told, models of clarity and brevity, and they're much valued for their autobiographical details. Some have considerable theological importance.
But the letters which hold greatest interest for us are those to his friend Basil. The two men were very different in temperament. Basil somewhat arrogant, fiery and volatile. Gregory mild and gentle. The two friends now and then had a quarrel. Basil would write a caustic letter. Gregory would reply, neither backing down nor compromising. He is just as severe as Basil, but never outraged. His letters, we are told, are filled with warm words and cold logic. He could see his own faults, and although he saw his friends too, he would not insist on trying to change Basil's views. Here he is, writing to Basil after a visit made to his friend in Pontus, and commenting on the rather rough hospitality.
The dwelling without roof and without door, the hearth without fire and smoke, walls, however baked enough, lest the mud should trickle on us, while we suffer Tantalus's penalty, thirst in the midst of wet. I have remembrance of the bread and of the broth, so they were named, and shall remember them, how my teeth got stuck in your hunches, and next lifted and heaved themselves as out of paste. You, indeed, will set it out in tragic style yourself, taking a sublime tone from your own sufferings. But for me, unless that true Lady Bountiful, your mother, had rescued me quickly, showing herself in need like a haven to the tempest-tossed, I had been dead long ago, getting myself little honour, though much pity, from Pontic hospitality.
But Gregory knew he had hurt his friend's feelings, and goes on in a milder vein to speak of the luxury of suffering hardship with Basil.
Who shall restore me to those psalmodies and vigils and departures to God through prayer, and that, as it were, immaterial and incorporeal life? Or to that union of brethren in nature and soul who are made gods by you and carried on high? Or to that rivalry in virtue and sharpening of heart which we consign to written decrees and canons? Or to that loving study of divine oracles and the light we found in them with the guidance of the Spirit? Or to speak of lesser and lower things, to the bodily labors of the day, the wood drawing and the stone hewing, the planting and the draining? Or to that golden plain more honorable than that of Xerxes, under which not a jaded king, but a weary monk did sit?
Before Basil was ever made Bishop of Caesarea, he had been governing the diocese, and at one point called Gregory to come and see him. It seems that he probably wanted to get Gregory for the vacant see, and Gregory, as ever, was unwilling and angry when he saw that, once again, he had been trapped.
You pretended to be very ill, indeed at your last breath, and to long to see me and bid me a last farewell. I shed a fountain of tears, and I wailed aloud, feeling myself for the first time unphilosophically disposed. But as soon as I found that the bishops were in the city, I stopped short in my course.
But Basil became Bishop of Caesarea, and on his death, Gregory preached in Caesarea this eulogy of his friend.
This, O Basil, to you from me. Receive this offering from a tongue once very dear to you, your peer in honor and in age. Look upon me now from on high, divine and blessed man, and hold back by your intercession that thorn in the flesh given me by God for my discipline, or else gain for me the courage to endure it. Direct my whole life to my greater good, and when I die, may you receive me where you are dwelling. Living thus together and contemplating ever more clearly and perfectly the holy and blessed Trinity, whose faint reflection is all we have yet seen, may our desires be thereby sated, and the reward bestowed for the fights we have waged, or that others have waged against us. But when I die, who will praise me as I have praised you? Always supposing he could find anything in me worthy of an oration. In Jesus Christ our Lord, to whom be everlasting glory.
Gregory became Bishop of Constantinople and was recognized as legitimate bishop there in the Ecumenical Council in 381. But when objections were raised to the legitimacy of his transference from another see, he resigned, went back to Nazianz for 2 years, and finally retired to the family estate at Arianz, where he died in 389 or 390. In the latter years of his life, Gregory wrote a number of poems, and here's a characteristic example.
If I were not yours, my Christ, I would feel a finite creature. I have been born and my life is dissolving away. I eat, sleep, rest, and walk, sicken, and I am healed. Numberless are the desires and torments that assail me. I enjoy the sunlight and the fruit of the earth, but I die and my flesh will crumble into dust, like that of the animals who have not sinned. What more have I than they? Nothing more, if not God. If I were not yours, my Christ, I would feel a dead creature.